Some purpose you must have, I guess. Else, why bring me to a place so godless? Ugrasthane. So, here, now, Prabhupada, the first line, he said that, Krishna, thank you for getting me here. Now, whatever is your purpose, please do it. And I was thinking, you know, there must be some purpose, otherwise why would I be brought here? Ache kichu karjatabe. There must be some purpose. And a very interesting word over here is Anumane. Normally we use the word Anuman where do we use the word Anuman?
Anuman Praman.
Yes. And we say we should follow Shastra Praman, Shabda Praman, not Anuman Praman. And Prabhupada is saying, I am doing some Anuman over here. Krishna, you must have some purpose. So let's try to understand this over here. Go ahead. So, actually, there are scriptural truths, but how those truths are to be applied in our lives, that there is no necessarily a clear-cut guideline for that. Every one of us has to decide that. So, Anuman, Krishna, you must have some purpose why you brought me here. So, Prabhupada, for him, the overall purpose is clear. I am going to serve Krishna. But specifically, how am I going to serve him? For a devotee, the intention is very clear. I want to serve Krishna. But the execution, how do I do it at a particular point? That there can be uncertainty. It's not that Prabhupada had some vision. There will be temples filled with devotees. But it's not that Prabhupada could see the future and he says, if I walk on this street, I'll meet this person. And then I'll give this class and this person will be there. It's not that Prabhupada saw the whole future. Like that. At least Prabhupada did not tell us that he saw future like that. So Prabhupada here is saying that actually when we try to serve Krishna, we all have to recognize that even for those who are fully guided by the Lord, Prabhupada was Mahabhagavat, fully guided by the Lord. He was there in America just for serving Krishna's mission. But even then, there's uncertainty. So the nature of this world is, we say this place of kunta, it's anxiety. Now anxiety is caused by uncertainty. And even for devotees, there's uncertainty. Yes, I want to serve Krishna, but how should I serve Krishna? Should I do this service? Should I do that service? Should I work in this way? Should I work in that way? There's so many anxieties which come up for us. Now, if we want to, if we are practicing bhakti, you know, we can have uncertainty about so many things. Should I take initiation from this spiritual master or that spiritual master? Should I, be in this ashram or that ashram? Should I marry this person or marry that person? Should I take this job or should I take that job? Should I do this service or should I do that service? There can be uncertainty about this. Now, there is the common underlying denominator is a devotee always wants to serve Krishna. And sometimes, if we get too caught in the specifics, should I do this or should I do that? We have to think about it, no doubt. But we shouldn't forget the bigger picture. And confusion about, should I do this or should I do that? And then we become so paralyzed by that. I don't know, should I do this, should I do that? Better I'll not do anything. And then what happens? See, indecision is also a decision. Is it? But indecision is a decision which is basically prompted by tamoguna, the mode of ignorance. So we have to just take small steps in serving. What can I do right now? As I take small steps forward, that path will become clear. Okay, let's see about this a little bit more. Can you move ahead? So now, Anumana, that is, there is a speculation over here, Anuman, but the word speculation has a negative connotation. But in scripture also, Jiva Goswami talks about there is a reasoning, there is Shastra Mulak Anuman, which is called as Vichar. Anuman means we normally talk about guesswork or speculation. But when we are trying to do reasoning according to scripture, then that is Shastra Mulak Anuman, that is called as Vichar, and that is encouraged. Prabhupada talks about this difference as mental speculation and philosophical speculation. So, when Krishna says that I am the taste of water, now what does it mean? Krishna says I am the taste of water. I accept that Krishna is the taste of water, but I try to use my intelligence to understand what it means. So, when we try to use our intelligence in this way, then actually we start getting deeper understanding of scripture, not just as a taught reality, but as a lived reality. So, actually, I have another PowerPoint, but I have this diagram. Maybe I'll show it later. You can visualize that this is our consciousness. Now, we hear from Shastra, and we get some spiritual knowledge, and we function in this world. And for functioning in the world, we need pratyaksha. I see what is happening. You know, I see who is coming, who is not, what is happening. We have to use our senses to function in the world. Now, the devotee has to do reasoning in a way by which we can harmonize our pratyaksha with our shabda. What I am seeing with my pratyaksha, what I am seeing with my eyes, how can I harmonize it with what I have heard from scripture? So when I am able to harmonize that, that is actually the anuman that is favorable to bhakti. So for example, scripture may tell us that actually wealth does not lead to happiness. It leads to entanglement, it leads to suspicion, it leads to envy, it leads to misery. But the whole world is telling us, oh, you know, wealth leads to so much happiness. Now, wealth is necessary in life as a functional necessity. But then if you meet some very wealthy person, and then that person says, you know, okay, I have this problem, I have that problem. If you somehow get close to that person, that is the advantage of, one advantage of being in the renounced order is that wealthy people don't see the renunciate as a competitor. Otherwise, in this world, we all have to put on a facade. I am happy, I am successful. So even if I have problems, so they say, we try to cover our problems. And they said that actually, trying to appear happy when we are distressed, it is very exhausting. It takes a lot of energy. Now, of course, that doesn't mean we go all the way around with a glum face. You know, I'm happy in my life. You should not make that. But the point is that in material life, we all put on a facade to some extent. But when we talk with, as a renunciate, when we talk with people, often we come to know people may be fabulously wealthy, but so many problems in their lives. So then, if I see a wealthy person with a big house, big bungalow, big car, many cars, I may look at that aspect in my protection and say, oh, this person must be very happy. Or I can look at the person's personal life and then they say that I met one person who was like one of the wealthiest persons in Maharashtra. And I was there a few months ago and he was telling that, you know, his wife had died of cancer and he was elderly and his son had become a drug addict. And his daughter had run away with some boy and married against his will. And he said, now that I am dying, they're all coming back. Not to be with me, but to get my money. So he was totally lonely. Totally lonely. So now, in the pratyaksha when we see, we can either look at how this world is an enjoyable place, or even within that, we will see that there is distress in this world. So when we use our reasoning, use our intelligence to harmonize our pratyaksha with our shabda, that is how that spiritual knowledge gets realized. So we have to do some reasoning over there. So now Prabhupada has come here and America is a completely godless place. And yes, there was of course Christianity, but even Christianity was quite materialistic. I'll talk about that later. The point is, Prabhupada especially, he came at a time of the hippie counterculture where people were totally materialistic. So, he seems completely godless and this is where he has come to give the message of God. So, what can you do over here? What can it is? There is one of the newspaper articles came out, Prabhupada in 1966 or 67, he said that, you know, Swamiji gave God to the world's toughest audience. It's very difficult. Prabhupada did was remarkable. The point is, what is the purpose? Why have you brought me here? What am I supposed to do here? There must be some purpose. So, this is not speculation in the sense of guessing. It is, we understand that Krishna is in control and Krishna has some plan. Krishna has some purpose. I don't know what it is right now, but I have faith. So, can you go next slide? Now, faith is not just certainty, but faith also means openness to possibility. Sometimes we may think faith, you know, I have complete conviction that Krishna will help me, Krishna will protect me. Yes, that is good. But then how is Krishna going to protect me? We have to be open to possibility. Krishna can work in many different ways. And we have to be open to that. So Krishna has some purpose. So many of you may know the story of a person who was caught in a flood. And he prayed to God, "Oh God, please protect me." And some rescue workers came. He says, "Come, the flood, the river is rising, come with us." He says, "No, no, God will protect me." And then the water kept rising. And he went from the lower level to the higher level. And another rescue worker came, he says, "Come with us." He says, "No, no, no, God will protect me." And finally, the water kept rising and he went to the terrace. And the helicopter came from above, they dropped rope, "Come, rescue you." He says, "No, no, God will protect me." And then finally, the water started rising, he started drowning. And he says, "God, why did you protect me?" He says, "I only sent the rescue workers to protect you." So, the way God can work can be many different ways. So, as devotees, when we have faith in Krishna's protection, we have faith that Krishna has a plan. But what that faith means is, it's not just rigidity. It's also openness to possibility. Prabhupada is exploring, you know, where can I get the opportunity to serve? How can I serve? Openness to possibility. Prabhupada said, devotees are opportunists. You know, the word opportunist is sometimes used in a negative sense. Don't be an opportunist. Wherever you get an opportunity, you grab it. But no, Prabhupada says, a devotee is an opportunist for Krishna. Wherever we get an opportunity to serve Krishna, a devotee is ready to go there. And that's what Srila Prabhupada did later when he was in New York and he was staying at the Mishra Yoga studio. And there he was doing allowed to do some kirtan, but he was not allowed to speak because that yoga studio was run by a Mayavadi. And he did not want people to hear the bhakti philosophy. So then Prabhupada decided to go from there to the Lower East Side. Now that was, like in India we have chawls. So it was like worse than chawls. And Prabhupada went there and he stayed there. He saw, why he saw, because some people were interested. Why did he go? Because some people were interested there. So basically, as devotees, there's openness to possibility. Wherever there is opportunity to serve, Krishna will help, but how Krishna helps, we cannot know by our advanced plan. So we have to be open. And Prabhupada writes in a purport that a devotee may be perplexed, but a devotee is never discouraged. Discouraged means I don't feel like serving. Perplexed means I don't know how to serve. So I don't know, so I'll wait and watch. So, achhe kichu karjo tabe ehi anumane. There must be some, I guess you must have some purpose. Otherwise, nahe keno ani bena ehi ugrasthane. Otherwise, my dear Lord, why would you bring me to this ugrasthan? Can you go ahead? No. What happened? Change the slides. Change the PowerPoint. Okay. So, nobody probably has labeled America as ugrasthan. At least not people who have come to American coastline. They're looking at America. India, America is the land of dreams for most people. Now, 25 years ago, before I was introduced to the Bhagavad Gita in a serious way, now I was more or less on the path to come to America. So all my relatives expected to come here. I have a maternal uncle who has his own company and he did not have any sons, so he wanted me to come and become his successor. And then, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about people becoming yoga bhrashta. So I became America bhrashta. Instead of coming to America, I became a brahmachari. Sir, about 3 years ago, first time I came to America. And after that, my relatives, they said, "Now your life has become successful. You've gone to America." So the idea is, that America is the destination of dreams for most people. And when Prabhupada is saying, ugrasthane, change the purpose. Okay. Yeah. So now why is he calling America as ugrasthan? Ugra means terrible, terrible place. Why are you brought me to this terrible place? So yes, see, there is the material vision and there is the spiritual vision. And the two do not see alike. So When Prabhupada is seeing the Shastra Chakra, Prabhupada acknowledges that Prabhupada would use technology for his for the service of Krishna. And Prabhupada appreciated the material progress that they had made. Now, sometimes we may have one approach is that we just condemn all material progress. Prabhupada then lectures says, now, Krishna has blessed all of you Americans so much. Now you have wealth, you have natural resources, especially his followers, you have youth. Now you just add Krishna to your life. Then your life will be perfect. So Prabhupada acknowledged that is, America had a prosperity. But at this particular point, when he is coming here, he's seeing not the material prosperity, he's seeing the spiritual poverty. Now, spiritual poverty means, ultimately, that people do not have a purpose for their life. If you look at society, one way we can understand a person's importance is by how much money they get. Normally, if we want to know who is what in any pecking order, especially if people work in a government institute, say in America. So, you go and say, if you go to university, look at their website, you find out how much they are earning. That indicates what their level is. So conversely, we can also see that if a person is being paid more, that means that if he's working in an institute, working in a university, working in a company, that means this company considers this job very important. And that's why this person is being paid so much. Now, if we consider today's world, who are the people who are paid the most? Who earns the most money?
Scientists.
Sorry?
No, doctors and lawyers.
No.
Politicians. Hollywood.
Entertainers. Entertainers, isn't it? They can be Hollywood stars, they can be Bollywood stars, even they can be sports players. You know, it is... what is it? There's one social critic, he said that, you know, if you can heal a cut leg, you earn only 1/100th of what you can earn if you can kick a ball with a leg. So, yes, all societies throughout history have had some entertainment. But actually, the sheer amount of money that is paid for entertainment, it's astounding. Now, just the amount of money that is spent on IPL every year. People say, oh, why do you build such big temples? You spend so much money, you've got to feed the poor. Well, why not feed the poor with the money you use for IPL? Isn't it? Actually, one IPL, you can feed all of India's poor people for one whole year with that. So much money is spent on that. Now, why is it that entertainers are getting so much money? Now, obviously, they're getting money because somebody's paying them. And they're being paid because their services are considered important. So, basically, the modern society is characterized by boredom, by purposelessness, by emptiness. And we somehow want to forget the boredom of our life, forget the emptiness of our life, forget the purposelessness of our life. And the greater the forgetfulness, people think, oh, maza aa gaya. We enjoyed it. So what happens is, basically, there may be material prosperity, but the material prosperity is not leading to any deeper fulfillment in people's lives. I think Denmark and Norway, they are two countries, usually many European countries sometimes top in world happiness surveys. And it's interesting that the people over there, they say we are very happy. And those countries have, I mentioned last year, that they have huge, they top the world in per capita consumption of antidepressants. So where is the happiness? So what, when we talk about spiritual poverty, what it essentially means is that their life has no real purpose. And that's why they have to create some stimulation. So most of technological advancement that has happened is basically to make the purposelessness of life bearable. to most most technological advancement is is done so that the emptiness of life, you have to make it bearable somehow. This is not to say that everybody is living uselessly. There are people in goodness, there are people in passion, there are people in ignorance. So, and there are always good people, but people in goodness are also there. But overall, the driving force of society is the mode of ignorance. Mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. So Prabhupada is saying that all this material prosperity is there, but there is no spiritual understanding of life. There is no ultimate purpose to life. And this is spiritual poverty. And that's why I say, oh, Grastane, covered with the modes of passion and ignorance. Can you go ahead? Yeah. Maybe we can sing the second stanza first and then we can go back.
So should I sing the second and third?
Yeah, second and third.
Together.
Explain, what is the Ugrasthana? So it's by passion and ignorance, everyone is covered. Rajastamagunera sabhai achana. How will their taste of Krishna Katha be developed? So, now it's fascinating. If you look at how exalted Vaishnava thinks, can you go ahead? Now Prabhupada is looking at, there's an obstacle for him. He wants to share Krishna's message and he's not able to see, he has an obstacle. But he is not looking from a sociological perspective. Oh, they won't understand my Bengali pronunciation. Oh, my English is not good. Or that, oh, they come from a different culture. These are important, no doubt. But Prabhupada is not focusing on this. He's focusing on the universals. And the universal principle is, he's seeing that actually it is the modes of passion and ignorance that are the problem. Now, again, as I said, the material vision, the spiritual vision, they do not see alike. And the same circumstance, as long as we are seeing with material vision, we may feel frustrated. But we start seeing with spiritual vision, we start seeing some opportunity, we start seeing some light. So that's what happened to Krishna at Arjuna at the start of the Bhagavad Gita. We are seeing from material vision, should I fight, should I not fight? If I fight, if I kill my relatives, if I don't fight, my relatives kill me. What do I do? It's what in management parlance is called as a lose-lose situation. Whatever you do, you lose. But Krishna, by lifting his vision to the spiritual level, he helped him see a different perspective. Now here, when he's talking about obstacles, from the scriptural perspective, all of us are souls. And the soul is eternally the part of Krishna. Can you go ahead? Yeah. Soul is eternally a part of Krishna and the soul is always meant to love and serve Krishna. But when the soul is covered and the soul cannot perceive its nature. Amai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are eternally a part of Krishna. So I put this as, no, be a part, be not apart. So when we follow our mind and senses, we become apart from Krishna. And manah shasthani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. We struggle, we suffer. So we are parts of Krishna, but we have become apart. And what is it that makes us apart from Krishna? Specifically, there can be many causes. But universally, it is the lower modes. And the lower mode, the mode of passion and ignorance, they distort our vision. So, what exactly are the modes? Prabhupada is going to talk about the modes repeatedly. Later on also he'll say about how one can overcome the influence of the modes. So, the modes are subtle forces that shape the interaction between matter and consciousness. That means, say now, if I'm looking at you, I'm looking through spectacles. Now, if it's called glasses in America, I think. Yeah. So, if I'm looking through glasses. Now, if this glass is red colored, I'll see red. So, like that, for the soul and the world is out here. The interaction is colored by the modes. So, the modes are subtle forces that shape the interaction between consciousness and matter. And Krishna describes in the mode of goodness, there is illumination. the mode of passion, there is hyperactivity. And in the mode of ignorance, there is lethargy. So one way we put it is, some people make things happen, some people watch things happen, and some people wonder what happened. So, the people who make things happen are in the mode of goodness. They think, they plan, and they do things. Some people watch things happen. I want to do this, but this went wrong, that went wrong, that what happened? You start one thing, and to get one thing, you make 10 things wrong after that. And it's become panicky after that. And some people wonder what happened. things just go on. So, in European literature, there's a character called Rip Van Winkle. So Rip Van Winkle was a person who went to sleep for almost like 100 years. And he woke up and came back, hey, what happened? Nobody is here, everything has changed. So, in your mode of ignorance, it's just like we just switch off completely. So now, actually the soul's spiritual perception is obscured by the lower modes. So Prabhupada is looking from the view of a spiritual doctor. Now I may go to a doctor and I say, I have weakness, I feel tiredness. I may describe symptoms which I see. The doctor, with the medical vision, sees something deeper. Say, okay. Doctor may say, okay, I think you have got some vitamin deficiency, you got this hemoglobin deficiency, whatever. So the doctor is seeing some other problem. That problem and this problem are related. But the doctor sees with a different vision. So there are many specific reasons why people may be turned away from God. But Prabhupada is focusing on the universal factor, that is the modes of passion and ignorance. And when these modes of passion and ignorance are there, then the doctor sees, okay, this is the obstacle, and then the doctor sees the cure also. So Prabhupada is seeing the cure, is that actually they have to hear Krishna Katha. But unfortunately, how will they get taste for Krishna Katha? Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Nahi Se Prasanna. It's not that we can't hear Vasudeva Katha when we are in the modes of passion and ignorance, but it is not joyful. We don't get joy in it. You can go ahead. So here, you know, what is the relationship between bhakti and the modes? Bhakti is transcendental. It is not under the influence of any modes. However, we are under the influence of the modes. So we can practice bhakti in any mode. I mean, in the practice in the sense of starting the practice of bhakti. Sometimes we may go for Harinam Sankirtan, and even a person who is a drunk may dance. And the drunk person may also experience some ecstasy. Whether it is alcoholic ecstasy or spiritual ecstasy, who knows? They experience something. Maybe it is a combination of both. So, but for them to sustain the practice of bhakti, the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, if they are very dominant, then you cannot sustain the practice. So we can start the practice and we can continue the practice also for some time. But if you want to steadily practice, we need the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is what enables us to do anything sustainably. It's not just bhakti. In the mode of passion, mode of ignorance, in the mode of ignorance, people just don't start anything. They just destroy everything. You know, they make a mess of things. In the mode of passion, they start many things but don't complete anything. They start this. And then what happens is that there's some excitement in starting new things. You tell the whole world, you know, I want to do this. But then, after that, the grind of maintaining comes up. It's too much. Let's start something new. So the sustenance doesn't come. Similarly, in bhakti also, if we have to sustain, we need the mode of goodness to some extent. Now, when you talk about the mode of goodness, if there's one ISKCON leader, he was addressing the devotees in the project. In that project, there are many senior devotees. So he told them that, for the smooth conduct of this project, everybody should function in the mode of goodness, irrespective of whether they are below it or above it. And some people claim, you know, I'm transcendental. No, but if you're transcendental, you can't function in this world. You have to function responsibly. So whether you are below or above, goodness is the mode in which you need to function. So here, Prabhupada is saying that because of the mode of passion and ignorance, people will not be able to perceive the message of Krishna. They will not be able to relish it. So what do we do? we ourselves to some extent are in the mode of passion and ignorance. And most people are also in the mode of passion and ignorance. So Prabhupada, he devised a twofold solution. He said that just hear. And second is, he created engagements which channel the mode of passion. And when the devotees started doing mode distribution, when they did it, it was quite passionate mode distribution, intense competition. And when the devotees started preaching, what Prabhupada expertly did was, he channeled their mode of passion. Then he told devotees, just go to whichever country you want. And Prabhupada came back in 1968 from India. They had a globe in there, like a map of the world. And all his disciples were there. Prabhupada just told all of them, all of you, pick one country. And go and deliver that country. And then Jadurani Mataji asked, Prabhupada, what about us girls? He says, we are not boys or girls, we are souls. You also pick up one country. So, now what Prabhupada did at that time was, he just triggered the spirit of adventure which they had in the mode of passion, and he channeled it in the service of Krishna. And that's how the movement spread remarkably. And in 1974-75, Prabhupada started, now we have to churn the milk. We have to create more a mode of goodness. So basically, we cannot demand what we don't have. If I have the mode of passion, I have mode of ignorance. I cannot demand I be in the mode of goodness. Well, I am in the mode of passion and ignorance. So if people are in the mode of passion and ignorance, we have to accommodate them where they are and give them opportunity to practice bhakti over there. At the same time, we also need to encourage them to come to the mode of goodness. So it is a very delicate line between what we understand as helping people to rise towards Krishna and what we understand as, you know, letting people stay where they are and adding Krishna in their life. They're two different things. Wherever people are, you just stay there but you add Krishna in your life. Mm-hmm. Another is rise from there towards Krishna. And both approaches are important. So when Prabhupada, he's seeing that the mode of passion and ignorance is what is obstructing. Now we in our life, we can see that there are some aspects of goodness within us, some aspects of passion within us, some aspects of ignorance within us. Now the modes of passion and ignorance are not necessarily bad. It is only when they become dominant that they become bad. So when they take control, they become the driving forces of our life. That's when they become bad. Otherwise, it's interesting that when the mode of passion and ignorance becomes dominant, it does not destroy the mode of goodness. Actually, it uses the mode of goodness for its own purpose. What do you mean by that? It uses the mode of goodness. When the mind takes control, the mind desires, I want to fulfill this desire. So, what happens at that time? The mind overpowers the intelligence. But the mind doesn't just overpower the intelligence. Afterward, the mind enslaves the intelligence. That means the mind uses the intelligence in its service. So after the mind has made a scheme, I want to do this. That is where things become very difficult. When people are just going after their desires, if they just intelligently explain to them, this is not good, they'll explain, accept it. And their intelligence can come to their rescue. But once they start using their intelligence to rationalize what they are doing, then it becomes extremely difficult to actually help them. I was in Britain, so I read about a court case filed by an atheist. And his case was that he wanted to declare faith in God as an immoral belief. Now why is that? His reasoning was, there is so much suffering in this world. And because there is so much suffering in this world, how can you say there is a good God in control? So he said that if we believe that there is a good God in control, that means we are denying the reality and gravity of people's suffering. And that is an insult to the dignity of human beings. And therefore we should reject this belief. Not just being atheistic, but this was actually called anti-theistic. Now going on a campaign against God. It's interesting that ultimately, when people turn away towards materialism, there may be a philosophy, but that philosophy is actually philosophy. Philosophy means that it's a sophistry of fools. It's a false argument. Now, yes, we may say there is suffering in this world, and there is a good God. Now, do we have any way to prove that the good God has caused the suffering? The suffering, whatever be the cause, we can't blame God for it. Most of you know probably that incident we tell. There's a devotee who went to an atheist doctor. The doctor said that, you believe in God? So of course. He says, there's so much suffering in this world. How do you believe in God? The devotee got treatment and went out. And after that he came back. He said, there's no doctor in the city. He said, what do you mean? I'm a doctor. He said, come out. Came out of his clinic and there was a beggar who was coughing bitterly. The fact that he's sick proves that there are no doctors in the city. He said, are you foolish? He said that he's sick because he's not coming to me. Exactly. So, people are in distress because they're not coming towards God. So if they come towards God, not just come towards God in a sentimental sense, but in terms of actually elevating their consciousness, then substantially the distresses go down. One of the greatest kept secrets of psychology is that religious faith is very good for people's health. Sigmund Freud was a prominent psychologist, and he had all kinds of crazy ideas. One of his ideas was that religion is a pathological belief. Faith in God is pathological. It's a disease. And although his ideas were totally debunked, but 100 years researchers have been studying, and they have consistently found that people who have faith in God, they are healthier, they are happier, they have better lives. But still, his whole idea goes on. Why? Because once a person starts rationalizing, then they use their intelligence to defend their belief. So when you're talking about the mode of passion and ignorance, today there is not just the mode of passion and ignorance in terms of sensuality. There is a sensuality, and along with sensuality, there is a whole propaganda to intellectually justify that sensuality. So when we rationalize, you know what is the spelling of rationalize? RATIONALLIES. Rational lies. So, you know what happens is, we actually deceive ourselves by this. So, a few months ago, I had to work on a paper on abortion. So, I was looking at the Purva Paksha. What is the opposite people's arguments? And I was shocked by the vehemence. So, there's a prominent proponent of abortion. And she has written that actually pregnancy is biological slavery and abortion is biological liberation. Now, what if her mother had thought like that? You know, yes, it's you can justify anything. So, there was this Peter Singer, is an atheist philosopher, and he along with some other people, they wrote a paper which created a furor. They said that if after a child is born, after the mother wants to abort, we should allow that. After the child is born. It created absolute furor. And then he said that these two atheist thinkers who wrote it, he says, don't be sentimental. He says, from the medical point of view, there is no difference whether the baby is inside the womb or outside the womb. If you are allowing the baby to be killed inside the womb, why not outside the womb? So now when it's outside the womb, we directly see it. This is terrible. When inside the womb, we don't see it. But the point is, when the intelligence is used to rationalize, then it becomes very difficult for people to actually discern what is right and what is wrong. So the modes of passion and ignorance, they don't just delude by creating desires in people's minds. They actually use the intelligence to rationalize that. And that's why Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that when he talks about karma, it is situated in the Indriyani Mano Buddhir. senses, mind and intelligence. So that's why Prabhupada, he wrote so many books. He wanted the philosophy to be explained. And by explaining that philosophy, one can actually lead to help people see through their rationalizations. So I'll conclude with one point here. When we are talking about the modes of passion and ignorance, they are not just some abstract entities. Now, when we look at people, we look at the way people live, look at the way people think. There's sometimes some people, we understand where they're coming from. Some people you just can't understand. How are they thinking? Why do they think like this? If you talk with them, you may get some understanding. But when the mode of passion and ignorance are prominent, at that time, the person's whole worldview gets distorted. Now, if you look in a telescope, what happens? That which is far away seems very close. That which is small gets magnified. But imagine if you look from the other side of a telescope. You look from the other side of the telescope, what will happen? Things will look, it will look very distorted. So basically, when we are in the mode of passion and ignorance, what happens is, that's like looking at the world from the other side of the telescope. So we look at a small thing, and big, big things that are there, they get obscured. So the soul, God, life's ultimate purpose, all this gets completely obscured. It gets completely obscured. And people seem to live purposelessly, but they can't live that. The greatest loss in the mode of passion and ignorance is there is no ultimate purpose to life. There is no, what am I living for ultimately? What is my life meant for? There was a atheist thinker. He made a very insightful statement. He said that actually the more science has advanced, the more we have understood the universe, the more it seems meaningless. Normally, when we understand something, we understand its meaning. But unfortunately, what has happened, the more we understand things, it's all meaningless. It's all meaningless. And we cannot live without meaning. And that's why people create all sorts of ways in which they have their own meanings. So I talked earlier about entertainment. They create fictional worlds and spend so much money in trying to create the fictional worlds, and they try to enjoy over there. So we'll talk a little bit more about